Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And as you know, this is one of my favorite times of the week when I can connect with you and you can connect with me. And you know that one of my favorite people, one of my favorite, who is that?
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, everyone. This is Richard.
Oh, that's so wonderful. We're both here. Anyway, we're coming into the Christmas season. I can tell because I'm getting a whole lot of catalogs. I think the mailman has a little bit of difficulty getting to my house. So I know we're in the Christmas season. And because we are, and it is such a special time of the year, we start thinking about the traditions that we're familiar with. You know, the time when baby Yeshua is born and the Blessed Mother and the three wise men and all the other wonderful traditions that we're familiar with. And because we can reach out and talk to those people on the other side, I thought it would be marvelous to find out all that we can from one of the gentlemen that was there when the babe was born in Bethlehem. And if you tuned into last week's show and are aware of it, you know that that was Balthazar, as I said, one of the three wise men. And we found a lot of really, well, I think, tremendous, beautiful information about this story behind the story, so to speak. And so you might say this is part two, because we're not going to repeat what we said last week, and that was tremendous information on there. And if you haven't heard that magnificent story, you can go to our website and listen to it again. Richard, would you be kind enough to tell those individuals who might not be familiar how to find it is where they can find it?
Sure. There is a page on our 2012 Countdown website whose name escapes me at the moment. I'll tell you. The 2012countdown.com, of course, but the page is called BBS Radio Show Recordings. You'll see it on the second last line on the left of the long and busy menu of pages which are there. So you can click on that page and you can hear all of our past radio shows going back to middle of last year even.
Well, my friends, as I said, if you haven't heard last week's show, then you really want to get this information because, as I said, it is beautiful information. And Balthazar is here. I see his face, his beautiful face. And what we usually do, if you're new to the program, Richard picks up the essence of whoever we are speaking to. And if you follow my directions, you might be able to tune into Balthazar's energies also and get a feeling for what it would be like to be in his company. And so take a couple breaths and relax and see the image of Balthazar in your third eye. You know, we've got all kinds of statues. He's the wise man that's wearing the turban. And see an image of that wise man and just call Balthazar. This is the way we call people from the other side to us. And it would be wonderful if you could feel his energies as Richard describes them. So, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to tune into Balthazar and tell our listeners what his energy feels like, that would be wonderful.
Yes, as I have said before, when we start these shows, they really come to me very powerfully in an energetic sense. They make it very easy for me to identify them. And so this description is probably pretty similar to last week. I can't remember. But essentially, how I experience him, again, I've spoken about this kind of spectrum that I experience from left to right, if you will, and I experience him just a little to the left of center, if you will, in that spectrum, and this beautiful, powerful, clear energy, a masculine energy, a regal energy, a powerful energy of great integrity. And there is also I sense great compassion in this individual. I can imagine he was a truly great leader in the essence of what royalty truly used to mean in the past. So a beautiful, clear, clean, strong energy. Beautiful experience, wonderful.
And if you, since you are connected with him now, let us see if he has a message that he wishes to give to our audience tonight.
Okay. And he's certainly here. Let's see what he has to say. Firstly, I am honored to return once more and to share with you a little more of my wisdom and understanding. I am also aware, although the audience is not, that this will be your last radio show before Christmas. And so it is entirely appropriate that we bring some focus to that special celebration, because it is a celebration of the birth of Yeshua. And as such, it represents a great outpouring of love in the world. And it is a time when, although there are many conflicts and issues that remain powerful and disruptive in the world, it is a time when so many disagreements of many sorts are put aside as people recognize this moment, not only in celebrating Yeshua's birth. Indeed, as we discussed last week, it is not actually the date of his birth, but merely the celebration thereof, a date agreed to be that celebration, very close to the winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere. But a time of celebration of what it is to be human. You see, underneath all that has been done with the truth of who and what Yeshua is and was, there is an understanding within every human being of the true mission that he came to fulfill, the true mission that he and Mary Magdalene together came to fulfill. And this understanding bubbles forth as part of the great love and joy that comes forth in that Christmas celebration. And so I wish to take the opportunity to wish you all a merry celebration of Yeshua's birthday in your Christmas celebration when it arrives in a couple of weeks from now. So this, in essence, is my message to you today. A Merry Christmas to every last one of you listening to this show live, and also those of you who are listening to this show in its recorded form, regardless of when you listen to it, because the energy of my wishes and my joy will be encoded in this recording. And if you allow yourself to feel this as you listen to this recording, you will feel that energy when you listen to the recording. This, in a logical sense, won't make any sense to you, and yet those of you that have worked with the material that these two bring forth will understand exactly what I mean. And so I truly wish you all, in every sense, a great Merry Christmas for this great Christmas celebration at the end of 2011.
Thank you, Balthazar. And thank you, Richard, for bringing forth his mission. Something that, well, we talked about many things last week, the fact that Balthasar was related to Yeshua and his family. And I want to ask a question about the other two kings. Is it accurate, Balthasar, that when you visited the baby, that you came with two other kings? And if you did, did they understand who Yeshua was and, again, know where he was going to be born?
It is true that there were other, what you might call, kings present with me. Indeed, they were, as your records suggest, they were also magi. They were also individuals who, like me, had carried these truths over many lifetimes down from the time of Atlantis through to this moment. And so, yes, they too understood who Yeshua was and where he was being born. They understood this as well as I did.
And thank you. And last week you indicated that you had brought some, I guess when you say documents, I would suspect manuscripts. And I wonder if there were tangible things other than manuscripts that one could read. Were there other gifts, as is indicated in our Bible stories? And the other thing that I want to know about the scrolls that you brought and gave to Mother Mary, can you give us some sort of an indication, perhaps, of the information that was on those scrolls?
Yes. To begin with, we did bring other gifts. Your Bible records gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And there is truth to all of these. However, what your Bible does not record is that the gold which was brought was indeed monatomic gold. And as some of you perhaps understand, in that time frame, monatomic gold was used by those who were able to obtain it, because, as you might imagine, it was not inexpensive, to assist with spiritual awakening. As you understand, that was a time when the energies were indeed very dense upon the planet, more dense than they are now. And so monatomic gold was used by those who understood it and understood how to use it to assist with the spiritual awakening, to assist with the opening of those spiritual gifts in terms of both the use of energy within the body and in the ability to connect beyond the veil and to connect with one's memories and so on. And so, in truth, as I say, the gold was actually monatomic gold to assist with this purpose. And the information within the scrolls spoke of some of the knowledge and wisdom and understanding and skills that it was important for Yeshua to understand if he was to fulfill his mission. Some of this knowledge had been shared previously with the Essenes in general, which had helped them to build their broad skills. But also there was additional information for these beautiful parents of Yeshua so that they could begin to teach him from almost birth, you might say, of who he was and what his mission was. Because as I explained last week, we understood who he was and what his role was, and in a sense, his birth represented the culmination of the work that the Magi had undertaken, and indeed the work that the Essenes had undertaken to carry knowledge down from Atlantis and make it available, and skills for not only Yeshua but also Mary Magdalene to fulfill their missions. And so much was focused upon that lifetime as an important step in the preparation for this time in which you are currently present. And so, as I say, there were great gifts from a knowledge perspective and a skill perspective that were present in those scrolls so that they could begin that teaching.
Thank you. I'd like, first of all, you did mention that the Magi were individuals who carried this, you might say, sacred information, sacred heritage from Atlantis to your present time. Can you give us some indication as to how large this group of Magi were and what part of the country they were located, and were they all working together as a group?
These individuals always chose throughout the intervening period to be born into roles and into places where they could assume what you might call royal roles. This may sound difficult if you take on the perception of history that is fed to you, that is, that in essence in that time humanity was strictly in caves and so on. But that really is not accurate. And so they always were born into these lines, you might say, and lines which had sustained this knowledge. And indeed, they had remained in that general area of the Middle East from the time of Atlantis, because there was always a great level of civilization of one form or another in that area. And so you may find this difficult to imagine, that individual souls could make these choices, but indeed it was very possible, and it was done. And so, yes, they gathered that knowledge in one sense by being born into those lines, but also it was not as if it was all one family, because as you might recognize, that would be too risky. There were multiple families, if you will, that these individuals were born into in this general area of the world, and they did connect with each other regularly every few years to, in a way, reinforce each other's knowledge, to refresh the knowledge. There were also artifacts, tools, and so on, which were kept and protected and brought down through those thousands of years from Atlantis, and were, you might say, preserved and in some cases made available to the Essenes. All of these, for the most part, have disappeared since that time. They were tools of interesting powers. And one of those tools that made its way down from Atlantis and was in the hands of the Magi for a great deal of time was the Ark of the Covenant, of which you have no doubt heard, and it is recorded in its role in the history of the Hebrews, though in fact it is an artifact that came down from Atlantis and was actually a gift given to humanity and has had a role in a limited sense since the time of Atlantis, but its true purpose was really directed towards your time. But that is the story for another day.
You have me so intrigued. Oh, I knew there were some kind of artifacts that you were working with. I never dreamed that you were actually working with the Ark of the Covenant, and it is handed down through the centuries for our particular time. In a general way, can you tell us where the Ark of the Covenant is presently, and what is its purpose? Can you give us some information that's not going to give away, you know, the most important punchline, so to speak?
Your history records that the one you know as Moses had this artifact, you might say, in the desert during his period of travel from Egypt to what today you call Israel. However, your history has broken the link between who that individual was and who he became. There are those who have figured out and have written about the fact that that great pharaoh known as Akhenaten and the one that you call Moses are indeed one and the same individual. And you might say his mission to lead the Israelites out of Egypt was a backup mission. And as part of that mission, he took that very valuable and important artifact with him. And as your history books record, it is able to, you might say, change time and influence matter. It had a role in ensuring that the path across the sea where Moses and his group traveled was clear and free of the waters. There are many elements to this particular story because, of course, they were traveling light and could walk across marshy areas, whereas those that followed were following in chariots and so on, and they were incapable of traveling across that area with the horses and equipment that they were using. So there are several elements to that story. There are also stories of it being able to hold back the waters of the River Jordan whilst a group crossed that river, and indeed that story is also accurate. And I share these elements with you because it is important to understand that this is a technology which has the ability to, you might say, change your experience of time and matter. Some of you, at least some of humanity, has begun to understand that there are, in a sense, two realities which coexist. One is the experience that you have of three-dimensional space and linear time. And there is what you might call a parallel expression of what you call reality, which is perhaps best looked at as three-dimensional time and linear space. And it is by moving matter somewhat into this realm that you can change the experience of matter as it is in your world. It is this secret, if you will, that was used to build the pyramids and many of the great walls that have been found with very, very large blocks of stone in South America and elsewhere. And the Ark of the Covenant is a tool which assists with that process. It has not been used for all of that kind of work, but it certainly is a tool which makes this possible. This is one of the things that it is able to do. It will also be used, if it is activated in your time, to assist with the cleansing of your planet of all of its pollution between now and the end of 2012. So this gives you some sense of its powers. It is not a technology which was developed within your consciousness. As I said, it was a gift given to humanity in Atlantis to be carried forth and made available in this time for the one who has the power to use it.
Well, that's extraordinary information, Balthazar. And you say it was a gift for humanity. Are you able to tell us who actually gave this gift to humanity?
There were several star groups involved with its development. You may be aware that the Sirians have primary responsibility for the progression of the human consciousness, you might say. But they do not do this alone. They also have assistance from the Arcturians, and it is primarily the Arcturians that produce the crop circles that you see, although there are also some that come from the Pleiades, who also in part have a role in this progression. And so all these three groups plus others had a hand in the development of this extraordinary piece of technology, extraordinary as you perceive it within your consciousness, though it is not quite so extraordinary when viewed from their perspective. It is a very, very advanced piece of technology from the perspective of your consciousness, but not so extremely advanced from their perspective. And it was put together in this small, powerful package so that it was able to travel down through your linear time experience and be available in your time.
Wow, such extraordinary information. Thank you, Balthazar. We have a gentleman on line one by the name of Kenneth, and we will be most happy to take his question of Balthazar. Kenneth.
Yes. Hi, Carolyn, and hi, Richard. I am just so grateful that for bringing the rejuvenation, and I also feel so thankful that, you know, everything is okay for you. I was a bit surprised when I listened to the voice for heaven. I was actually taking a bus, and I was listening, and I was shocked, and I was in tears because I was so happy that I know you guys are okay. So I just want to say that congratulations, and thank you for bringing this forward.
Well, thank you, Kenneth, but do you have a question for Balthazar?
Yeah. Yes, quick questions. During the, you know, I heard so many stories regarding about, there was one area where, you know, when Joshua was in the tomb, and that his physical body was resonate, but some people saying that it was his spiritual body that actually came alive. And so I guess my question was, how did Joshua was able to spend the time with Mary Magdalene to France? Was it not due to his physical body, or was it due to his spiritual body that he lived during that time with her?
Okay, I'm trying to understand your question, Kenneth, and I think what you is this your question, that when Yeshua was in the tomb, after the crucifixion, we understand that he survived, and you're asking if this was his spiritual body or his physical body that lived on. Is that your question?
Yes, basically that was my question.
Okay. We'll see if Balthazar, that's not part really part of the Christmas story, but we'll see if Balthazar has some information on that. Richard, did you? I think you
Yes.
understood the question. Mm-hmm.
As has been reported by others on this radio show, Yeshua did not die on the cross. His physical body survived, although only just. He was able to still his bodily signs, and there are those who live in your current time. Some of the great yogis are able to do this even today. And so his bodily signs were stilled. And so to the casual observer, he appeared to be dead, but in fact he was not. And once he was taken down from the cross and taken to that tomb, then the work began to revive him. And even though his physical body was severely damaged, as you would understand, he did survive and he began to recover. However, in stilling his bodily signs, what happens when that is done is there is a separation which opens up between what you might call the soul and the physical body. And indeed, the energy bodies also begin to separate to an extent from the physical body. And it was these energy bodies and also Yeshua's soul which undertook the work which has been discussed previously to reconnect the energy lines between the angelic dimension and your current dimension. These energy lines were broken during the fall and needed to be reconnected for ascension to be able to proceed. And so he undertook this work using his soul and his energy bodies. And so when that work was completed, he completely reconnected to his physical body and brought great energy back into his physical body, as has been previously expressed. And this was almost like a radiation energy, you might say, and that is why there was that image of his body imprinted on the shroud that was covering his body at that time. And so you might say his spiritual body certainly survived, but indeed so did his physical body. His physical body continued to exist from that moment. It is not so that he simply existed in an energetic form beyond that moment. It is not so. Indeed, he lived on and fathered a further two children after the crucifixion event was completed.
That is so interesting. Thank you, Balthazar. And thank you for asking the question, Kenneth. We appreciate it. And we have someone on line two now. And I think it's Raphael. Am I pronouncing it right, Raphael?
Yeah, this is Raphael from New York.
Thank you. And your question?
Yes, I've just finished reading the book, a channeled book, channeled few more than 100 years ago. It's called The True Life of Jesus of Nazareth, The Confession of St. Paul. And he's talking about the conspiracy of St. Paul that took the teaching and turned them around to create the Catholic Church. I'd like to know the accuracy of this book.
Well, let's see what Balthazar says about that. If St. Paul actually turned the teachings around that Yeshua had left, that eventually became the tenets
the confession.
Of the Catholic
called
Church.
It the confession.
I gotcha, the confession. So okay. What does Balthazar have to say about this?
As the Bible records, Paul was not one of the disciples. He never met Yeshua. He describes an experience on the road to Damascus, which was transformative for him, as he expresses it. And indeed, it is accurate to say that this individual set out to change the path of what those teachings of Yeshua were about. It is why there was such conflict between what Paul was teaching and the teachings of the disciples of Yeshua, because they did not align. And so it is valid to argue that this twist in the truth of what Yeshua was teaching was aided and abetted by Rome. As you might understand, Paul was indeed a Roman. And so you could well argue that indeed his path was indeed the first step that led to the formation of the Catholic Church. I am not saying that Paul entirely did this from the perspective of seeking to lead away from the teachings of Yeshua or to bury that truth entirely. I do not take the view that he was motivated in this way. Part of it was indeed ignorance that contributed to this, but it did serve as a very powerful platform upon which the distortions of the Catholic Church evolved.
Thank you, Balthazar, and thank you for your question, Rafia. We appreciate it. And so I would like to go on now with more of the Christmas story, so to speak. And my next question is something that we hear in the Bible about the angels singing in the heavens and coming to the shepherds as they raised their sheep in the mountains, or in the hills, rather. And is this, in fact, some basis of truth? Do you know this, Balthazar?
There is some basis in truth for these stories. There was a great light, you might say, in part response to this alignment that I mentioned last week. But more than this, there were indeed angels that came very close as they were able, to acknowledge and to celebrate this birthing process. And indeed there were those who were present in the fields at that time who had enough, you might say, spiritual awareness to become aware of these angels. For most people, this would not have been something that they would have been aware of. It was something that those who possessed those spiritual gifts in, to some degree of current activity, you might say, were aware of this. And so there is a level of truth to this story, and it did indeed lead to some of the shepherds coming forth to connect with the birthing of Yeshua.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And that brings us to the next question about where Yeshua was born. Tradition says he was born in a cave or a stable where animals were kept, and that he was laid in the manger because there was no room in the inn. Can you give us some insight? Since you were there, can you give us some insight into this?
This is a fabrication which has been brought forth by those who created the Bible for the purpose of seeking to demonstrate the lowly nature of Yeshua's parents and the birth of this one. In truth, Yeshua came from a very royal line. He did indeed come from the house of David. More than this, the family was not suffering financially. The uncle of Yeshua, Mother Mary's half-brother and the father of Mary Magdalene, Joseph of Arimathea, was at that time perhaps the wealthiest man in the known world. Certainly the wealthiest man in that area of the world. And so neither Yeshua or his parents, or indeed Mary Magdalene and her parents, because Mary Magdalene's mother, you may recall, was my daughter, none of them were in any state of financial difficulty. And indeed the families had properties, not directly, but relatives had housing in the area. And so Yeshua was born in the house of a family member, not in a cave, in a stable, in a manger, as that story tells.
And I assume from what you said that it was a house of great means with luxury, I would suspect.
It was not the most luxurious house that you might find in the area, but it certainly was not a house of what you might call poverty by any measure. The house was a house that did not lack for anything.
Thank you. And something, if you can cover also, there is the story that the parents of Yeshua and Yeshua himself were moved into Egypt to escape the plans of the king of that area for protection. And so can you give us some insight into that?
This is accurate. Very soon after the birth of Yeshua, they traveled as rapidly as they were able to Egypt to ensure that the actions of Herod could not threaten Yeshua's life. So this story is accurate.
And did the family stay with Essenes, or they had to have known some people there who could shelter them? Who were they?
Yes, they stayed with Essene families. There were Essenes, as you understand, not only in what you might call Judea, but also in Egypt. There were Essenes in the area of what today you know as Cairo, and also in the area of what you know as Alexandria. And so they had family, you could say, to stay with, because the Essenes treated each other very much as family. The bonds between that Essene community were very, very strong indeed. They all understood the fundamental nature of their mission as a community, as a group. They understood their connections back to Atlantis, and so the bonds that bound them were like family. And so they would readily take care of each other in this way.
Thank you. Now, that's a long distance to travel in that particular period of time. And so did the Holy Family travel the way it's depicted on donkey? I mean, that would be a very difficult journey. How did they get to Egypt?
It is true that they traveled overland with the animals of the day.
I wasn't sure if they did a combination of both on water or on land. So that would have been a very vigorous journey with a newborn. We have Helen online too. Helen, welcome.
Hi, Richard and Carolyn. Thank you for the show. I have two questions. And the first one is, I don't know if this question has been asked or redundant or has been explained, but I'm going to go ahead. Is we talk about Holy Mother Mary giving birth to Yeshua, and she was a Virgin Mary. is that true, historically true, or is a fabrication?
Well, let's let Balthasar say.
Oh, thank you.
Balthasar, can you please give us some indication of this? Was this a virginal birth?
In simple terms, it was not. I will add to that by saying there have been many myths and legends created throughout human history speaking of the notion of the virgin birth of great leaders. And this story, this myth, if you will, has become married into this piece of history. It has no basis, in fact. The father of Yeshua was Joseph ben Jacob, and Mother Mary was no virgin at the time of Yeshua's birth. He was conceived in the usual manner.
Thank you. And Helen, you're next. You said you had another question?
Yes, thank you. I, from the previous show, I understood that Christmas was picking kind of randomly to the for Yeshua's birthday, not his actual birthday. Is more close to was more close to the day of his death. But I still want to ask: does still that this December has some significance? Or it doesn't matter. It's just some random date. The important thing is Yeshua is born.
Well, let's see what Balthasar has to say. Was the December, did this December 25th date have some significance in the calendar?
If you examine the major celebrations of the Christian Church, they really connect with pagan festivals that existed in Europe in particular. And if you look at the date, the 25th of December, it is relatively close to the winter solstice. And so this date, this winter solstice, has always been a date of great celebration, because whilst it is the beginning of winter in a formal sense, it is the also the beginning of the lengthening of the day once more. More than this, the ancients recognized that these dates, the solstices, the equinoxes, eclipses, and so on, just as the work of these two have demonstrated with the energies that they have spoken about coming through these gateways, the ancients understood the energies that came through that winter solstice. And indeed, if you examine the activities and history of some other religions, you will see celebrations in the Himalayas and elsewhere of these dates. So, in truth, Christmas is actually connected to a celebration of the winter solstice, although it has, with time, been shifted a couple of days later than this solstice.
Thank you, Balthasar. And thank you, Helen, for asking the question. We do have to move on because we're so close to the end of the show, and we have one more person who would like to get a question in. And yes, darling. So we would like to go to line one and Douglas. What is your question, Douglas? Welcome.
Hi. The number three, we know that it's like a really, really important, and I wonder if there's some significance to the fact that he was working with two other kings, that there were three, and if each one of them held a specific resonance that contributed to the overall.
I love your question. The proverbial triangle. So what does Balthasar have to say about this?
You make me smile with your question, Douglas. Of course, the number three and the creation of energetic triangles is always important. And indeed, there was an energetic aspect of what the three of us brought forth at that time. We were not casual visitors. We were magi. We were masters of energy. And so, yes, in addition to the gifts that we have listed, there was indeed an energetic gift that we delivered to that newborn, coming together in that triangular form and delivering this gift to him in an energetic sense. It is very perceptive of you to have asked your question.
Thank you, Douglas. You're really thinking there, aren't you? Thank you so much.
Okay.
So we're very close to the end of the show, Richard, and according to my clock, we have like maybe 8 minutes, and I would like to thank Balthazar in a very special way for being here, for giving us this incredible insight. And before we let Balthazar go, Richard, did you have a question of Balthazar?
Not really, to be honest. It's kind of a little difficult when you're inside those energies to operate in that mode.
Well, I didn't know if you had, you know, a question.
I do. I just have one question for him, and that is there any other information that you would particularly like to share with us on this day, on this occasion? Something that is there for you to share with us that you have not already shared?
Are you talking about the first Christmas, or are you talking about this new moon?
Whatever he wishes to say.
Okay. Sounds good to me. What does he say?
I will take this opportunity to mention to all those listening to this show that the day upon which this show is being recorded is the day of the full moon and the lunar eclipse that has just occurred some 12 or so hours before this. And this event is an extremely powerful moment upon your planet. If you have not already done so, I encourage you to find the YouTube recording that Richard has loaded and Adam created of the messages that these two were given in regard to this date. It is a very important and powerful date in terms of the preparation of humanity for the December solstice of next year and the events that will unfold from that moment over the next 3 months or so. And so it is an important gateway, a very powerful gateway, bringing forth powerful, sublime energies. And as you listen to this recording, my bringing this forth into your awareness will see these energies encoded into this recording. They are beautiful, beautiful energies. And so enjoy these energies and remember this date and this message. It will be a date that will go down in your history books. And so it is.
Oh, thank you so much, Balthazar. You know we love you and we appreciate you, the time that you have spent with us. It was a great blessing in this Christmas time. And we'd like to, and I'd also like to thank Richard for being so faithful, bringing forth these messages. And Adrian, who is on line three, I'm very sorry that we didn't have the time to get to your question, but call back another time on another show. We only have 3 minutes that's left. And so, Richard, I don't know if you are clear enough. We have 3 minutes. Is there anything that you wish to say?
Well, seeing we're speaking of Christmas and Yeshua's birth and so on, it might be an appropriate moment to mention that extraordinary newsletter that you have begun to create that really came out of one of these radio shows a few months ago when there were so many questions that not only you had but others had of Yeshua and his mission with Mary Magdalene. And so that extraordinary newsletter called Yeshua Then and Now began to come forth. And the information that's really emerged from that has been truly extraordinary. And if you haven't connected with that and the information that's begun to come forth through it, I encourage you to go again to our 2012 Countdown website as one of the places you can find it. Again, look at the menu just below the BBS radio show recordings link. You'll see a link to Yeshua Then and Now, and you can order the free copies of that newsletter. The first three issues are free. So go and subscribe if you haven't already done so and receive those and see that extraordinary material that Yeshua has been sharing with Carolyn. It is truly breathtaking in my view, quite extraordinary.
I'm so happy that you reminded people of this, Richard, because the answers to, well, the questions are eternal, so to speak, but the way Yeshua handles the answers, they are so personal, so intimate. You really feel like you are drawn into his persona. And so we have 1 minute left. I'd like to offer my friends out there, whether you listen to this live or you hear the recording, a happy, holy time. Open yourself up to the blessings that are around you because they truly are abundant. This is a time of the year when people forget petty, what shall we say, incidents in their life, and they open up their home and their hearth and their heart to love. So for now, goodbye.
And goodbye from me. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Indeed.